It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Iraq hit by deadly car bombings. U.S. eases quarantine policy for Ebola responders. I'm Ray Kugel reporting from Washington. Two car bombings killed at least 34 people in Iraq Monday. One of the attacks, a suicide bomber, killing at least 24 Shiite militiamen at a security checkpoint near Jurf al-Sakhar. That's a town government forces say they had recaptured from Islamic State militants. In the other attack, a car bomb explosion killed at least 10 people in central Baghdad in a neighborhood filled with shops and restaurants. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, meets health workers and senior government officials today in Freetown, Sierra Leone, day three of her tour of Ebola-hit African countries. Ambassador Power is assessing the region's Ebola response efforts. There were questions at the State Department daily press briefing on Monday about Ambassador Power's possible exposure to the disease. State Department spokesperson Jennifer Saki.
She's not visiting any Ebola treatment units. They're observing all hand-washing protocols and doing temperature screenings multiple times a day.
Jennifer Saki also said while in West Africa, Ambassador Power is expected to urge countries to increase their efforts to fight Ebola. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued new guidelines for returning health workers. The CDC is calling for health workers at the highest risk of infection to voluntarily quarantine themselves at home. A U.S. nurse quarantined in New Jersey for exposure to Ebola was cleared for discharge on Monday. And a 5-year-old boy in New York tested negative for Ebola after arriving from Guinea with a low-grade fever. This is VOA News. In Tunisia, the main secular opposition party is claiming victory in the country's historic election for a new 217-member parliament. The Nida Tunis party says a preliminary ballot count shows it's won close to 80 seats, more than any other party. President Vladimir Putin asked Russian lawmakers to revoke the right they had granted for Russian forces to intervene in Ukraine. Reports say that President Putin issued the request to the upper house of parliament Tuesday. President Barack Obama urged Mr. Putin by telephone Monday to help implement Ukrainian leader Petro Poroshenko's plan for easing political tensions, starting with a ceasefire declared on Friday. The White House says President Obama called Mr. Putin to pressure Ukraine's pro-Russia separatists to observe the week-long ceasefire and to halt the flow of weapons across the border from Russia to Ukraine. A new Israeli settlement plan is further raising tensions between Jews and Arabs in Jerusalem. Robert Berger reports.
Israel is advancing plans to build 1,000 new housing units for Jews in disputed East Jerusalem. Yariv Oppenheimer of Israel's Peace Now movement says settlements are destroying any hope of reviving the peace process.
When the government is making the decision to build settlements, it actually changes the reality on the ground for years to come.
Jewish settlement activist Yisrael Meidad welcomed the construction plan and praised Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for standing firm against domestic and international opposition. Robert Berger, Jerusalem.
A man in California in the U.S. West was found guilty of the murders of two University of Southern California students from China. 22-year-old Javier Bolden was convicted Monday in Los Angeles of two counts of first-degree murder. Bolden faces a sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole for the deaths of two 23-year-old Chinese engineering students during a robbery attempt in April 2012. South African prosecutors will appeal the conviction of culpable homicide and the 5-year prison term given to Oscar Pistorius for the shooting death of his girlfriend. Pistorius began serving his prison sentence last week at Kgosi Mampuro Prison in Pretoria. Countries in the Horn of Africa will be getting more than $8 billion for development under a new initiative unveiled in Ethiopia on Monday. Pledges from the European Union and three international development banks will target 8 countries and are designed to reduce poverty and create economic growth and opportunities across the region. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Libya's prime minister is in Sudan as Khartoum denies supporting any faction in the Libyan conflict.
Actually, we have good relations with all the parties there in Libya. And our intention always is that we are calling for peace and for dialogue between the different parties there in Libya.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's Minister of Information. South Sudan's government accuses rebels of launching fresh attacks on government positions. The Gambela camp hosting South Sudan refugees in Ethiopia is beyond its capacity. And fighting between Cameroonian forces and Boko Haram militants has continued for 30 days in northern Cameroon.
Allusion is being made of an armed rebellion under the cover of Boko Haram in Cameroon. This is a bunch of ungrounded, flagrant allegation.
Issa Chiroma is Cameroon's communication minister. Junior and middle-level doctors in Zimbabwe have gone on strike to demand improved salaries and working conditions. And authorities in the United States have issued new Ebola guidelines for health workers. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudan has again denied that it is supporting any faction in the Libyan conflict. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says Khartoum has always been interested in peace in Libya. This comes as Libya's internationally recognized Prime Minister Abdullah Al-Thani arrived in Khartoum on Monday for a three-day visit. Last month, Al-Thani's government accused Sudan of sending its aircraft carrying ammunition into the southern Kufrat region of Libya, bound for armed groups who effectively seized Tripoli in August. But Information Minister Bilal says Sudan has no interest in interfering in Libyan affairs. He said Prime Minister Al-Thani's visit will clarify the truth of the Sudanese government's position towards the elected Libyan government.
Actually, we have good relations with all the parties there in Libya. And our intention always is that we are calling for peace and for dialogue between the different parties there in Libya. And now the visit of the Prime Minister of the legitimate government in Libya can answer a lot of questions. Among them is that there was an accusation for Sudan for siding the rebels in Tripoli, which is not correct. That's the aircraft talk when they said that came from Khartoum and then landing in Kufra and after that in Tripoli. We said at that time this trip is scheduled and this is for getting supplies for the common troops between Sudan and Libya. Now this visit will start tomorrow with negotiations in different aspects for cooperation between Sudan and Libya.
So you are saying that Sudan is not taking sides in Libya?
For sure. We said it before and we assure it now. We are not aside any side in Libya.
Mr. Minister, what can you tell us about the upcoming election? There were some reports that your government is hinting at postponing upcoming elections.
In fact, actually, this has been said before. When we start the national dialogue, and if we could reach a consensus about all the agenda in this dialogue, and then we all together, opposition and government, we reach an agreement that the election should be postponed, then it can be postponed.
We did have a talk with the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Ms. Fatou Bensouda, and she was talking about Darfur and Sudan, and she said that no matter what happened, eventually your president, President Omar al-Bashir, will have to come before the ICC.
This is as expected, and he said this is it's every time. We know that as well. The ICC is construction and what is called about the international community and these things. Unfortunately, all these are standing for the Sudanese to reach stability and peace. Even the unilateral sanctions have been signed by the President of America. And sometimes they're talking about incentive for Sudan to go forward in the national dialogue and these things. And now these incentives come to be out. They have renewed the sanctions. We are not expecting any good things coming from all these places. places. But I assure you, we are very serious, very genuine to go forward in the dialogue. And I'm sure all the Sudanese will reach a place whereby they can agree about how to be ruled to the country and about all our problems needing solutions.
Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. South Sudan's military spokesman says rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar have launched fresh attacks in oil-rich Unity State. The allegations were also made Monday by South Sudan President Salva Kiir, who said that the rebels were also preparing to attack Malakal. But rebel spokesman Ruai Koan said the rebels were not the instigators. The allegations of new attacks come a few days before both sides are supposed to meet in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, for new talks to end the country's 10-month-old conflict. Military spokesman Colonel Philip Agwo says rebels have not committed themselves to any ceasefires since May this year.
This morning, they have started their attacks in Unity State, and the fighting took place in a place called Unity Oil Fields and Kilo Teletin. These are areas in Unity States, north of Bantu Town. This attack started with a mobilization that we in the SPLA have been informing the public that the rebels are mobilizing with the intention to attack Bantu. Today, they are advancing from two directions, from the direction of the north. It's a group that came from Khartoum, that was training Khartoum, and moving from the areas of the Sudan into South Sudan. The international community that is represented by the United Nations mission in Bantu is aware of these attacks.
The rebel spokesman has said that these are allegations by your government, a pretext by your government, so that your forces will use it as an excuse to attack rebel positions.
It's just ridiculous. The rebels have been just misinforming those who do not know the geographical areas of South Sudan, those who do not know the area. But even the United Nations mission in South Sudan, they are in Bantu, they are in all these areas. They should tell the world who is attacking who.
Colonel, these allegations of renewed fighting are all coming at least a few days away from talks between your president and former Vice President Riek Machar. Is this an excuse by both sides so that the talks will break down again?
Whether the talks will fail or will succeed, that is a different issue. The reality is on the ground, the rebels have been attacking and have been fighting, and they have not committed themselves to the ceasefire. If their leader, Riek Machar, have not signed the agreement that was made a few weeks ago, then I don't see any point of rebel trying to project themselves as people who are committed to ceasefire. How do they commit themselves to something that they do not even sign?
Earlier, did you say that the rebels who carry out this latest attack against your forces were trained in Sudan? Let me say that if that is what you said, Khartoum has denied taking sides in the South Sudan conflict.
I doubt whether Khartoum is serious. All the attacks that have been committed in Upper Nile are committed by the rebels that have been crossing the borders of Sudan into South Sudan.
Colonel Philip Agwo is South Sudan's military spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Available resources for South Sudan refugees in Ethiopia are under pressure as the warring parties continue to be deadlocked in successive peace talks. As Martha Vanderwolf reports from Gambela in Ethiopia, more refugees are expected in the coming months as the conflict in the world's youngest country turns almost a year old.
Since the conflict in South Sudan erupted in December, some 245,000 South Sudanese have fled to Gambela, a southwestern province of Ethiopia. Pagak is one of the three main entry points used by refugees, who cross a bridge that functions as the border. Just after the bridge on the Ethiopian side, more than 2,700 refugees are waiting in the registration camp, and all of them need shelter, food, and basic services. Refugee Joseph Tech acts as camp leader on behalf of the refugee community. He says that people come to him with their needs, which he passes on to UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency.
They just need the mosquito net because the mosquito bite.
But don't want.
First, they need food. Yeah, because in July we don't have food here. and we just received food in August. They feel cool because there is no blanket.
Niall Yeech is a refugee who came to Ethiopia in March. He says they need more services than what is provided. He says they don't have enough water and medications. The diseases that affect people in this area are causing swollen throats, and many people have malaria. Fighting continues since a political split between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar erupted in violence in the middle of December 2013. More than 10,000 people have died and more than 1.5 million have been displaced. Several agreed on ceasefires since then have failed to hold. And there's little optimism that the violence in South Sudan will be halted anytime soon, meaning refugees will keep coming to Ethiopia in need of relief. There are 18 aid organizations assisting refugees in the Gambela region. They say that up till now they had a good year with enough resources. But the situation is changing with unforeseen costs, mainly due to a flooding here. The rainy season flooded roads and camps and temporarily slowed down the influx of refugees. But there are still 50 to 60 new arrivals every day at Akobo, another border point. Dennis Solborg-Kjeldsen of the International Federation of the Red Cross says that they are bracing for a new wave of displaced people.
We're all expecting that once the rains subside in South Sudan, that will potentially mean the rise of conflicts and people wanting to go in search of food, security. And where will they come? Well, they'll come here.
The rains are expected to stop in a few weeks' time, and organizations such as the IFRC are launching an international appeal to raise more funds. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Gambela, Ethiopia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 28th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Fighting between the Cameroonian military and suspected Boko Haram militants has been going on in towns and villages in northern Cameroon for a month. Cameroon says the militant group wants to extend its grip from Nigeria's Borno state across the border into Cameroonian territory. At least 250 people have been killed in the battles. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has details from the northern Cameroonian town of Mora.
People have been fleeing from the Cameroonian border communities where fighting has been raging. Aminu Jafaru, resident of Dingding, says assailants killed 22 people in their village before Cameroonian forces arrived. He says he is grateful to the Cameroon government and military for saving their lives. Cameroon's military spokesman, Colonel Didier Bajek, says at least 250 people, including 9 soldiers and many civilians, have been killed along the 500-kilometer-long boundary that separates Nigeria's Borno State, the base area of Boko Haram, from northern Cameroon.
Cette secte est en possession d'un véritable arsenal de guerre et ne planifie pas.
Colonel Bajek says Boko Haram has an impressive arsenal of war weapons and attacks regularly to extend their territory from Nigeria's Borno State into Cameroon's border villages. Colonel Bajek says late last week, Boko Haram fighters fired rockets when Cameroon's Chief of Defense, General René Claude Meka, visited the border localities to encourage his soldiers.
Je veux vous dire qu'à cet endroit, il ne se passe pas d'heure sans que cette zone ne soit alimentée en feu nourri.
He says no single day passes without the enemy attacking and trying to seize the town of Fotokol. A few months ago, the militants seized the Cameroonian border town of Ashigashia and were finally chased away after close to a month of occupation. Cameroon's Chief of Defense, General Meka, is defiant and vows to defeat Boko Haram in Cameroon.
Le Boko Haram doit savoir que quoi qu'il fasse, où qu'il se trouve en territoire camerounais.
Boko Haram should know that we shall use all available means to destroy them, he says, adding that they will not find refuge in Cameroon. Cameroon's communication minister and government spokesperson, Issa Chiruma, has strongly refuted allegations that the Nigerian group has already installed itself in Cameroon.
Allusion is being made of an armed rebellion under the cover of Boko Haram in Cameroon. This is a bunch of ungrounded, flagrant allegations. Everyone knows who Boko Haram is and what their motivation from their base in Nigeria are.
The Nigerian militant group has fought a bloody five-year revolt mostly in northeast Nigeria, where it wants to carve out an Islamist caliphate. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Mora.
Zimbabwe's junior and middle-level doctors went on strike on Monday to demand improved salaries and working conditions. But the strike of about 400 doctors is putting the country at high risk, especially in the wake of this year's Ebola epidemic in West Africa. The doctors issued an ultimatum earlier in the month demanding an increase in the basic salary of junior doctors from $282 per month to a minimum of $1,200 per month. Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association Bulawayo Chapter President Emerson Pazara says there is no going back on the doctors' industrial action.
At Impilo Hospital, everything has been brought to a halt because all the doctors have decided to down there too. Saying our plight hasn't been heard as doctors, that the people who are responsible are not representing us. So we've decided to take this into our hands and take this industrial action as such.
The government is saying this is an illegal demonstration.
Yeah, obviously, this is not the first strike by doctors in Zimbabwe. You have never had a strike in Zimbabwe which is called legal anyway. But according to the constitution, our new constitution, we followed all protocols we given our government, a 14-day ultimatum, which we gave them on the 3rd of October.
We also understand that some striking doctors are receiving threats. Is this true?
This is very true. We have received the threats, and some of our members have been actually called, and they've been questioned on one or two issues about the ongoing strike. But this is not barring us from going on with our strike. We have said, come what may, victimization or not, we are going to stand on our feet and defend for our faith.
Who exactly is threatening the doctors?
Unspecified people are calling. They are calling our members in Harare, here in Bulawayo. And we are saying, comrades, we are doctors. We are not going to be threatened by anyone who is calling us. They are telling us we just want to know the information. Why are you going on strike? And we ask them, who are you? They are not giving us a solid response.
That was Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association Bulawayo Chapter President Emerson Pazara. He was speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control has issued a new set of guidelines on how to handle healthcare workers returning from Ebola-affected countries in West Africa. As VOA's White House correspondent Luis Ramirez reports, the new guidelines come as the Obama administration clashes with state governments that have recently imposed quarantines on doctors and nurses who have been in Ebola zones.
White House spokesman Josh Earnest did not go as far as openly criticizing the governments of states like New York and New Jersey for requiring health workers coming from Ebola zones to be quarantined. But he said any policy meant to protect Americans from Ebola should be based on science and should also consider the wider implications.
We want to make sure that whatever policies are put in place in this country to protect the American public do not serve as a disincentive to doctors and nurses from this country volunteering to travel to West Africa to treat Ebola patients.
Earnest said people like Casey Hickox are heroic. Hickox is the nurse who was quarantined in a tent by the U.S. state of New Jersey after she came back from working with Ebola patients in West Africa. The case triggered outrage among some medical experts who criticized the measure as inhumane and unnecessary. The Obama administration has resisted calls for a travel ban or quarantines, saying the measures would hinder efforts to fight the disease at its source in West Africa. The guidelines released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are only recommendations, and the federal government cannot force the states to adopt them. Under U.S. law, federal authorities can detain, examine, and release people arriving in the U.S. who are suspected of carrying communicable diseases, but only the states have authority to enforce isolation and quarantine laws. The question came up Monday on whether Samantha Power, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, will be scrutinized upon her return after visiting Ebola-afflicted nations. Officials said Power will abide by the health laws of the state in which she lands, but they noted she may not be subject to quarantine since she is not a health worker. State Department spokesman Jen Psaki on Monday said Ambassador Power's delegation did not have contact with people infected with Ebola.
She's not visiting any Ebola treatment units. They're observing all hand-washing protocols and doing temperature screenings multiple times a day.
Also Monday, Pentagon officials said a small number of U.S. Army soldiers deployed to help West African nations fight Ebola were put under quarantine at a base in Italy. Officials said none of the soldiers were exhibiting symptoms and are being watched only as a precaution. White House officials continue to say the likelihood of a widespread outbreak on U.S. soil is extremely low. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the White House.
Twenty-five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with cricket. Hosts Malaysia beat Uganda by 4 wickets at the Pepsi ICC World Cricket League Division 3 in Kuala Lumpur on Monday. Despite this setback, Uganda still head the log, featuring six nations having won their first 3 matches. In football, hosts Zambia and Ivory Coast play to a 1-1 draw in Lusaka on Saturday, while the visiting Egyptians outclassed Kuwait 5-2. On a sad note, words alone cannot fully express the sense of loss and grief at the shooting to death of South African national team goalkeeper and captain Senzo Meiwa, the Confederation of African Football President Issa Hayatou wrote in a message of condolence to the South Africa Football Association head Danny Jordan. Meiwa was shot dead in Vosloorus Township, some 30 kilometers east of Johannesburg in South Africa on Sunday. As goalkeeper, Meiwa kept a clean sheet in South Africa's matches in their 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations Group A qualifiers. South Africa currently head Group A with 2 rounds of matches to complete the qualifiers. In athletics, Ethiopia's Aberu Kebede clocked 2 hours, 22 minutes and 21 seconds to triumph in the women's race at the BMW Frankfurt Marathon in Germany on Sunday. In the men's contest, Mark Kipto prevailed in 2 hours, 6 minutes and 49 seconds to lead Mike Kigen and Gilbert Yego in a Kenyan 1-2-3 medal podium sweep. Meanwhile, Kenyan Titus Mbishei and Paris Chepchirchir prevailed in the men's and women's contest at the Marseille to Cassis 20-kilometer run in France. Elsewhere, Ethiopians Behailu Mamo and Conjit Tilahun clinched the men's and women's title at the Venice Marathon in Italy, while Kenyan James Rungaru and Ethiopian Belianesh Oljira triumphed in the men's and women's races at the 16-kilometer Bupa Great South Run in Portsmouth, Britain on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, October 28th.
I am very, very ashamed of most African leaders who want to remain in power forever. Imagine the Zimbabwe First Lady could agitate to succeed her 91-year-old husband that have ruled Zimbabwe for 34 years. Let us borrow a leaf from the Western world and it shall be well with the blood. I am Prince John Ushia in Obudu Kate Ranch, Cross River State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Tunisia's main secular opposition party is claiming victory in the country's historic election for a new 217-member parliament. The Nida Tunes party says a preliminary ballot count shows it has won close to 80 seats, more than any other party. And that's it for this Tuesday, October 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that all of you in Africa will have a nice day.
Do you love African music?
Music time in Africa.
Wake, 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 umaru, wake.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.